Beautiful. From my dining room table on South First Street in...
Extra, extra!
Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk gaming and game development.
I'm Martha McGarry, and I make nice games.
I'm Stephen McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Martha Cry, too, make nice games. In this episode, your nice hosts bring you another Nice Games Bulletin. We discuss the latest news from the broader world of video games, or at least as latest as we are able. And so, if everyone's ready, let's start.
I'm glad it wasn't me that did this.
Well, thanks for the assist.
You're welcome. Anytime.
There and in the intro as well.
It's news time.
Yeah. We've got all sorts of things to talk about. And because of our weird recording schedule,
yes,
we're actually going to be relatively timely with this one.
Yeah.
Relatively.
Yeah. Probably already tired of hearing about this.
Yeah.
This
don't point, get used to it, people.
Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah.
We are still at Mark's place. Recording. We're gonna make sure to keep it peppy.
Well, see, you say still, but we're actually releasing these episodes out of order.
Crap! No, calendar math.
So this is news to people.
Oh, okay. So we've never been at. Nope. I don't know where I'm going.
You know, tune in next week to learn all about why we're here at my place instead of in the clubhouse.
Yeah, that's good.
In other news, Steven, you're going to E3.
I am.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's been a dream of mine to go to E3. Mm-hmm. It's nice because I got I'm industry now, so I get to go for free. It's like a whole process to sign up for it, and like they needed two forms of identification, and like I don't have like an IGDA membership or anything like that. So I was really worried about it when I applied. I didn't know if they would accept my stuff. Cause like my company changed like names and stuff like that. And I was like, but
that's always the case for these things. Yeah. You feel like what's the council of elders that reviews your thing.
Yeah.
I think they ask for a lot because one or two of them is enough and they just want to like, you know, there's enough different credentials probably.
Sure.
That said, it's not, they don't just give it out to anybody.
That's true.
It's actually not, you know, it's not just a, you know, yeah, I make games, and I'll invite you.
Yeah.
So, you're pretty special.
Yeah. good job getting that free pass.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. The way I've heard of it is it's basically like going to a park, a thrill park. But, like, you play games instead of, like, going on a roller coaster or something. And I like thrill parks, so this will be fun.
You just be camped out in whatever Nintendo announces
probably,
for the fall.
Yeah. Oh man, maybe they'll talk about new Smash characters. I'll totally just sit in line for 4 hours so I can play a character in Smash like one
time. Then you're gonna go home and buy.
Yep, I'm gonna do it.
What is Nintendo? So Luigi's Mansion 3.
Oh yeah, that's
what true. Else doesn't have a date?
Animal Crossing.
Yeah, that's right. That's probably gonna be a big fall release.
They'll bring something up for that.
There's a new Pokemon, right?
Yes,
like a traditional Pokemon game.
Oh yes, that's right. That'll be there. Oh dang, got a lot of games.
And then maybe an unannounced thing or two.
Yeah. Ooh. It'll be fun. And then, yeah, maybe I'll play Sony games or Microsoft games. We'll see.
You'll glance over in their direction. Yeah.
They'll be there and I'll be like, I acknowledge you.
Yeah. And they'll feel honored.
Yes. Oh, goodness. In other news, we're going to see a Deep Space Nine documentary, Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, because we would like to talk about Star Trek here on the program.
Yes.
You'll find out more about that next week.
I'm looking forward to this. It'll be fun.
Yeah, so Deep Space Nine is my favorite Star Trek series. Martha, is that true for you?
I mean, yes.
Well, Voyager's closer to your heart.
Right. But DS9 is actually an objectively better show.
Whenever you say that, you're just sort of sad when you say that. Like,
look, it is a really good show.
Yeah. You just wish Voyager was better.
Exactly. I'm not, like, props to DS9. It's literally the best one. Mm. But I wish Voyager's level of competency was a little bit better overall. Like, there are some really good Voyager episodes, but they are pulled down by like the Omega episode and the episode where they turn into lizards and no one ever talks about that again.
Okay.
And all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
So Star Trek Deep Space Nine premiered in 1993. So it had its 25th anniversary recently. Mm-hmm. And Ira Stephen Baer, the showrunner of the later seasons, who was really responsible for like a lot of the tone of the show in its sort of final years.
Okay.
Raised money to make a documentary about the show. This you know, DS9 is one of those shows that had like a lot of serialized storytelling and that presaged shows like Battlestar Galactica and Lost and the modern era of TV where you just sort of binge episode after episode. Mm-hmm. And so at least it gets some credit for that. How much it deserves, who's to say? But as the Star Trek property, it was always seen as like the stepchild.
Yeah.
Right? It was always like a, because it was never on by itself. It was always, it was always another Star Trek happening at the same time.
Oh, okay.
And so it was always the second Star Trek show for its entire run.
Hmm.
Interestingly.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, well, it's sort of gotten a new fan base in recent years. And so they have this documentary, and they're gonna show it in theaters. So yeah. When this episode comes out, it'll be, like, in a week or so, right?
I think you're right.
Something like that. So like, there's probably still available. You can check it out online if you like want. We're not here to sell at, but, like, we're gonna go. We're gonna have a good time.
Maybe we'll meet you there.
Yeah.
No.
Well, someone will recognize your voice, Martha.
Probably. Yeah, I'm excited. Mark, you wrote down here that you actually finished Baba Is You.
Yeah, I beat all the levels.
Wow.
That's it. That's all I have to say on the topic.
Okay.
I promised listeners I would fill. I would.
Oh, you know, right. This is the update from last
time. Yep. Okay, yep. Yeah. Actually, it was the last bulletin, I think.
Yeah.
You did it, y'all.
Yep. All 220 odd or whatever they are. Yeah, I feel okay about it.
You just sound so down about it.
No, I've talked about it before, but it just okay. I love that game. I just wish I liked it more than I did.
Sure.
The actual experience.
It's the Voyager of games.
No. I wouldn't go that far. I mean, that's a mean thing to say about something.
Wow. Wow.
Let's get into some news.
Yeah.
So, upcoming or recent releases. Mortal Kombat 11 just came out and it looks real bloody.
And surprising no one.
Right. This is interesting because you're a huge fighting game fan.
I am.
I don't know that you have a history with Mortal Kombat.
I played Mortal Kombat 9 and I played 10 a little bit, but I played 9 a bunch.
But you also do not like blood and guts.
Nope. I don't. You know, in 9...
You don't like it when people pull out each other's spines and stuff like that?
I can't say I'm a fan. I'm kind of... Yeah, I'm really
I'm
screaming.
So surprised.
I know, right? But like, yeah, this one looks especially like nasty. The 10th, like Mortal Kombat 10X, I guess, whatever, looked really bad. But I was like, okay, I can take this. I can tolerate it enough. Maybe I'll try it. I don't like Mortal Kombat that much, so I didn't play it much. But I mean, I'll play a new fighting game. But like 11 just looks... So I don't even want to look at it.
You know, I mean, I guess, but like, how much more ill is it than the previous two? Like,
I don't know.
With the X-ray of all the things, it's so bizarre, and there's so much blood. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
it's like cartoonish in a weird way.
Oh yeah, it's like super cartoonish. I think that's why I was able to tolerate 9 because the graphics were not good enough for me to make it like feel extra disgusting.
Well, get
like,
it on Switch. I hear the graphics aren't as detailed.
I might think about that. but like, it's just, this one just looks so detailed in how the brains get squished from someone's skulls or whatever. God. So I just,
content warning, everybody.
Sorry.
Well, I read a thing about how it has to use everyone in game development's favorite phrase, it has a lot of ludonarrative dissonance because the Mortal Kombat games have rare amongst fighting games have an extensive single player mode.
That's right.
With lots of narrative cutscenes and cinematics and like characters with depth and history, which is, I can't believe it. It doesn't make it, you know.
Sure.
There's a lot of lore to this series, and there's a canonical story and all that. And like, the article I read was saying like, oh, you play like Sonya Blade's daughter, and you there's a one of the training matches. It's like teaching you how to play the game.
Okay.
Is fighting against your mother in this like in this sort of a battle arena just to test out, and then like you like break her spine and like drill put a drill into her forehead.
Yep.
And then the cutscene after is just like, all right, the good training, Mama. Like,
yeah, like, okay. Like, there's a lot of that stuff in fighting games, but it's real bad in Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, and like just like in Uncharted, somebody gets clipped with a bullet in their leg, and then like they can't fight the next round.
Yep.
And you're like, excuse me, didn't you get your heart pulled out?
Right. Yeah.
Maybe they're all immortal. Is that part of the story?
I think that's, I don't know. Some of them are immortal or something.
Because it's
think...
like the game is like JoJo's adventure. It sounds like just in a fighting game form, because that happens to JoJo's Adventures too.
Yeah, the people anime. Will get their spines broken and
yeah, and then they're fine.
Get up. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Well. All right.
I think they breathed more, and then they're fine.
I think they just embrace the disconnect, right? Yeah. Like you have to, right?
Yeah, yeah. Because yeah. otherwise, you can't get all the good cutting people in half fun that comes with them.
I just can't even.
Yeah, there's been press about this game, and the reason I put it on the list is they got MMA fighter Ronda Rousey to voice Sonya Blade.
Right,
she's a big fan of Sonya Blade. Like, I only know that because they're putting her out to press. Like, she was on the Colbert Show, and like, and that's how they're promoting this game, is with this bit of stunt casting.
Okay.
And Ronda Rousey is a kind of problematic figure, actually. We'll put a
which
link.
I just found out about, and I'm bummed.
I'm sorry. But not only that, apparently, not to be Evil Games Club, but apparently she's a terrible actor. So, but stunt casting is stunt casting. It gets the job done for what it's for. But anyway, there's other elements. She's apparently sort of spread some conspiracy theories and is not a. Anyway, we'll put in the show notes because I think it is worth reading.
Disappointed.
because of like the I think gaming is now a mature enough medium that we should not be forgiving these things.
We should be paying, and we are paying attention to these things, especially like how the games are getting made. We're talking about crunch and layoffs and all that stuff. So like this is relevant information.
Yeah, and we've got news on that in the rest of this episode. So we'll go to the next game anyway.
There's good news too.
Yeah, there's some good news. Yeah. Stay tuned for that. You never know which is which.
That's true.
What else came out?
So Nintendo Labo VR came out.
And I see, Mark, you have one sitting over there.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this when we talked about it when it was announced, is I just wanted to try it. And there's the Mario and Zelda experiences that they had.
Mm-hmm.
So I got the cheaper version, just has fewer of the put-together toys, which I think limits the experience. Because when you build a little headset, you throw your Switch in there and you put it on your face and you see all little cardboard shavings in your view, which is a thing I've done from Google Cardboard. You really have to take your phone out and wipe it off because it's always like
stuff it's nasty,
on it.
Yeah.
It's like that times 10 on the Labo. But all the demos they include with it are really, really surface level, like very Unity. My first demo, like how do I do a jumping mechanic? How do I do a shooting mechanic? Real, real thin, very not Nintendo.
Yeah.
And there's like 30 of them or something, very small experiences. And they're meant just to show you, just have a little thing. And because I didn't get the full kit with all the different experiences, I didn't really get to see the polished Nintendo experiences. And I haven't tried the Zelda thing yet. I just haven't had a time to really get into it, but I hear it makes you sick. So
I'm not surprised about that.
Yeah, well, I think we theorized that it might be like, it'll just be the normal game, but you could also move your head around.
Yeah.
No, it's less than that.
Oh,
it's just the normal game, and it turns your head motions. It just keeps the same motion control from the game. Literally all it does, it's basically 3D mode, not VR mode.
Oh God.
So you want to turn off motion controls so that your head doesn't rotate around Link.
Yeah.
And then you use the right stick as you normally would. And if you're familiar, if you've played like Fallout in VR, any of those games that are twin stick style games in VR and are comfortable, then you'll be okay. It'll just be 3D Zelda.
Yeah.
But if you're expecting, if you move your head movements, you will barf immediately.
Oh, wow.
Is what I hear anyway. I haven't tried it for myself, partly because the first impressions I read were like, and so I'm like, okay, well, I definitely want to try it, but I'm less motivated to really get into it. So,
well, let us know how it goes.
Yeah,
that'd be cool.
I recommend it like for kids, especially. Like, it's a good way to introduce kids to VR. I think is
right, and it's a cheap way of doing it too. Like, most, I mean, at this point, I'm sure you've probably bought Switch for your kids because they've been asking
if you're a good parent.
Right.
Wow, guys.
So my nephew's birthday was this month, and my sister was like, I'm going to give him one of those finally.
Yeah.
He's been asking for 2 years.
Right, yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember.
Every time I go over to my sister's place, my nephew runs up to me and goes, did you bring the video game?
Oh. Same with my cousins.
Yep. Yeah, that's so cute.
And I'm like, when he has his own, is he going to love me? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, once my parents got me Super Smash Brothers, I stopped loving them. No, I still love you, Mom and Dad. I'm sorry. Picross 3, S3, came out.
This is you played this, right?
I have not. I'm playing Picross S2. My brother has been playing S3.
Okay.
I started on S1. Why are they all S's? Picross
Special
one.
Edition.
Yeah, I don't know. I started on the first one when my brother was playing the second one because I was watching him play and I was like, how do I play this? And then I got frustrated when I was playing it and I was like, I can play it better. Yeah. And I just played it by myself.
Well, I put it on the list because I thought I wanted to ask you about it.
Oh, dear.
But I mean, whatever.
Yeah. Well, this one has it has new features. It has like a color mode. So like you can... they have Picross things where you like put things based off of colors in addition to, you know, the regular Picross gameplay. Yeah. And in S1 and S2, they don't have the colors thing and it's just like black or whatever. And then they put the colors in after you complete it. But now you like put the colors in as you do it. Mm-hmm. My brother bought this other game a while ago called
Pick a Piece.
Yeah. Pick a Picks. Yeah. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. We talked about it before because I play that game a lot.
Yes. He was not a fan of that game. So he was really excited about this one because it looked like it had the same gameplay, but like with the Picross polish that my brother enjoyed more, I guess. So
I like Pick a Pick.
Yeah, no, it didn't seem like a bad game at all. And it has four player. I don't think Picross has
No, it's just,
okay.
It has that too.
I hear that it's cheap too, right?
I know two was like $8. So this new one is probably $8 or maybe a little bit more.
Yeah.
But like not too much more expensive.
I mean, I think the value you get on it is probably, you know,
worth
a lot. It feels like a good deal.
Yeah. There's so many puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
Dragon's Dogma came out on Switch. Mm-hmm. I love this game. I have bought it like 3 times already and I might buy it again. It's just really good.
So I've heard that I don't know anything about this game. Yeah. I hear it a lot and I keep mixing it up with things like Dark Souls and Bloodborne and other games that have similar sounding like nonsense fantasy phrases.
Yes.
Like what is this game?
So Dragon's Dogma, it has a weird story. You're this character.
You don't say.
Yeah. You're this character who this giant dragon comes out and takes your heart and I guess and you have to fight to get your heart.
Oh,
back.
It's like Dragonheart.
Yeah.
Does the dragon die if you die?
No. Oh, you end up.
So it's not like Dragon.
You end up killing the dragon or whatever. But like, what's really cool about this game is it has like a party system. But like, you just get a bunch of AI controlled characters. But like, with the way this game works is like these AIs, like they go into a rift and they can play in other people's games and they gain knowledge from other playing in other people's games. And they when they come back to you, they can use that knowledge when you're fighting creatures or exploring the world.
Okay, so what kind of game is this?
It is an action RPG.
Okay.
It's kind of like a little bit like Monster Hunter because a lot of the gameplay I enjoy of it is like hunting the monsters and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's open world, so like you can run around and explore things and they have secrets and stuff around in the world. It's very fun. But like the open worldness of it is a little it's like different from other things because there's not a ton of things in the world.
Sure.
And I think from what I've heard, like when they were working on the game, they had to cut a lot of content out in order to get it to release.
Okay.
And I'm assuming they haven't added it since.
So this is a re-release on Switch. When did the game come out originally?
I think it came out in high school. I was playing it, I think, in like 2008.
So everybody, just when you were in high school.
Right. Yeah. that time. I think it's like a 10-year-old game or something.
Okay.
But like I bought it on PC, I bought it on Xbox 360, and then they had a re-release but had more content in it, and I bought that. And I think I'm gonna buy it on Switch because
that's probably why I think I've only heard of it recently because of its like a remaster re-release.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. So that's just one of a bunch of Switch ports that came out recently.
Yeah.
When I was looking at the list of things around now, like tons of Switch ports of PS2 era games.
Mm-hmm.
So a bunch of Final Fantasies, like Final Fantasy 13 and then X and X2 remastered.
Okay.
And then Final Fantasy 7 came out a while ago on Switch.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And I think that's just an initiative Square Enix is doing, is just getting them all on Switch eventually. What else? Resident Evil, Resident Evil 0, Resident Evil 4. Those are all coming to Switch or are on Switch.
Back at home, Resident Evil 4. Because the first one came out on GameCube.
That's right, yeah. Cool. And then Saints Row 3... or Saints Row the Third.
Saints Row's great.
Yeah, I hear that.
Yeah.
Saints Row's gonna get a movie adaptation, I hear.
I don't know about how I feel about that.
Yeah. That sounds weird.
That doesn't sound like
that game. I mean, that went franchise off the rails.
Yeah.
At the end there. So
yeah, that's, you know, true. So like they can do whatever they want.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a franchise that can't ruin a movie.
It's true.
Yeah, that's true.
It'll be dumb no matter what.
It's true.
And so that's fine.
Yeah. I want it to be like Deadpool.
That's the tone they'll go for.
I hope so, because I love Deadpool
movies. Yeah. Actually, that might be a difficult question of, like, are they going to be able to make a rated R movie? Because that's always the consideration people have, is it limits your audience.
That's true.
And really, it's a PG-13 sensibility, you know, in terms of its actual audience.
Yeah.
So they might have some trouble with that.
I kind of wish that they had got, like, well, I don't know. I want to see Detective Pikachu, but since it's Deadpool's voice, I almost want it to be, like, very dark.
I think also Assassin's Creed 3 came out on Switch, too.
Yep, that's another port. I played that on Wii U because it was a launch title for the Wii U.
Okay.
In fact, it was the best version of Assassin's Creed 3 was on Wii U because it was a little higher, because it was the, for a brief time, that was the most powerful console.
That's right.
And it had second screen features.
Ah, yeah, okay.
Batman Arkham City had, had a bunch of second screen features. Mm-hmm. A couple other, Mass Effect Trilogy, I think, did too. Mm. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But a couple of like high profile 360 PS3 ports really actually did put a couple of extra things. It wasn't a ton. Mm-hmm. But then by the end of the Wii U, the life cycle, there was like nothing on for the second screen.
Yeah.
So sort of a, I do wish we lived in an alternate universe where the Wii U was more successful.
Yeah, I like, cool. I did like that feature of it, but like people didn't, it was hard to explore. It was still so different and only one place to explore it in. So yeah.
I will say though that for a game like Assassin's Creed 3, where you are just hunting around for stuff all the time, and the map is really important, having it in your hands is kind of great.
That makes sense.
It worked out really well for that.
Cool.
Yeah. What else? That's all I put on this list, but like it's just been a trend that I wanted to
A bunch of Switch ports.
Like indie Switch ports happened too. That's like I've noticed. Yeah. I can't remember any off the top of my head, but there's a lot.
Well, Switch is definitely that platform where like people will rebuy games, and I'm not sure if this is true, but I think the impression is that like that lapsed gamers are picking up a Switch, you know, because of how popular it is, and so the idea to not just sell them games that they're nostalgic for, but games they missed.
Yeah.
Give new life to it. So.
Oh yeah, like Valhalla is on there.
That's yes, that one game where you're selling people drinks, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That game's cool.
I might pick that up.
Stuff like that. Other news, Rage 2 came out, or is coming out.
Yeah, I didn't put dates on this because like we're not a news show.
It's a thing.
It's around now. Look at yourself.
But what's interesting about that is I feel like I haven't heard anything about Rage 2, or at least I haven't like heard about it like coming out.
Yeah, it was announced. It was a surprise announcement.
Right.
Bethesda's something. I don't remember if it was E3 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gotten some press since, but it's kind of flying under the radar a little bit.
Yeah.
The
first one probably did too, now I think about it.
Well, the first one is interesting because it was id Tech 5. Like,
yeah.
It was the showcase for their new engine.
Mm-hmm.
Big open spaces, texture streaming. I read a lot about the tech behind it, actually. Really fascinating.
Okay.
But the game was kind of fine.
Yeah.
It basically was a more of a showcase for the tech, apparently, which is sort of that's its deal, I guess.
Yeah.
And so this is developed by a different team. And it's just it was a weird choice for IP. No one was really clamoring for a sequel. But the more I see of it, the more it seems like something, Martha, you'd be into it, because it just has a lot of superficial similarities to Borderlands.
Oh, yeah. I should check it out.
It's like a dusty world and then splashes of pink everywhere. Like, that's cool.
Yeah, actually, that's pretty accurate.
Ooh, I like that.
Like Mad Max, but with a smile.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah, mm-hmm. I'll check that out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. And the best game on this list
No.
Fine. Okay. It's a game on this list. Bubsy, Paws on Fire.
No. Okay. Why? It made me so mad because another Bubsy came out recently, like a couple of years ago or a year ago or something.
Yeah.
And every single outlet covered it. And I was like, why are you covering this terrible game? Like, they had like hour long playthroughs of it.
Yeah. Well, Bubsy is historically bad. Like, worst game of all time bad.
But. Yes.
That's why people were covering it.
It's like a redemption story. And so I wanted to talk about this because I didn't know this, Martha. You'd said this before the show, that there was a Bubsy game last year.
Yeah.
And I looked it up. I'm like, there is. It's really weird. One prior to that was 1996. And I played the Bubsy games.
Oh, wow.
Because I was that age,
right?
When it was like a... Like, I like Mario. What's sort of like that? I've played Sonic. Like, what else is there available to me? And the Bubsy games were it. You know, there were others, but that was one of them trying to, you know.
Did you like it?
No. But, you know, when you're, you know, 11, like.
Yeah, you just play whatever.
It's okay. Like, nothing wrong with it. But, like, it became a sort of sign of, like, the rush to have these mascot platformers after Sonic. It wasn't even really after Mario. Like, Sonic was a reaction to Mario.
Right, yeah.
It was the reaction to Sonic being this market-friendly mascot that really leveraged a lot more of these things. Mm-hmm. And Bubsy was sort of the cynical result of that. At least that's its reputation.
Yeah.
And so it returning, like the marketing for this new game is like, it has everything that Bubsy fans and Bubsy haters want. Like it is really trying to like leverage into that. And mm-hmm. I think there's something about these waves of nostalgia where like it is just the right time for this, because the demographic with money in their pocket remembers these things.
Yeah.
And so if you can get yourself a license to one of these like meme friendly things from the mid to late 90s,
mm-hmm. you can't even make a good meme out of it though.
I mean, I've seen some. Back then,
you know, Toe Jam and Earl's coming back.
That's true.
And like people did love that series. Mm-hmm. It has a charm, but like, well, not great.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. But you know, that's the thing about it is the new Bubsy game is being taken seriously. It's going to be a real game. Like mm-hmm. they want to make it good.
Right.
And the new Toe Jam and Earl, I hear, is pretty good. Right. And that one, I think, is made by the original people as well. So that's a little bit different.
Yeah.
But there has been, it's never been easier to revive a franchise.
Okay.
Right.
It's time for Gex. Gex needs to come back. I don't know if y'all heard of Gex.
Let's not get crazy.
No, Gex is amazing. I love Gex.
What is that?
Gex, you were this lizard who just knew a bunch of knowledge stuff, and he just constantly wisecracked about one-liners and stuff and from movies.
So,
and
like real unique is...
Okay, I wasn't unique, but like I like Gex. I grew up with Gex.
Yeah, he did like, it was like parodies of genre stuff, yeah. Right? There was like a Secret Agent one.
Yeah, that was, I think that was the one I played. No, I don't remember. I didn't play the first one, but I played the second one.
Yeah.
And I was always confused because I guess when I was really young, I didn't realize there was a sequel, even though it said Gex 2.
Yeah.
But like, I was like, why is this lizard just sitting here in a lazy boy, like, in retirement or something?
Good question.
And then all of a sudden he gets back into it and starts doing things. And I was like, what's going on? I don't get it. But like, he's got a tongue and he can lick up stuff and he can hit things with his tail. And I was like, yeah, I don't know.
See, your impassioned defense of these totally random nonsense things is exactly what this is about. It's like the idea of like, so if they made I don't know, I might have talked about the show, this Saturn game Bug.
I remember you brought that up.
Like, that is a game that is also bad, mm-hmm. but if they made another one, I'd be in line for it.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I'd buy a Gex game, so y'all, bring out Gex.
So that's, bring out Bug. I think that's the motivation behind these things, and there's a cynicism to it,
yeah.
But also there's something about, like, there's something, it makes people smile.
It would just be nice that somebody else who wants to make the game remembers that this game I played when I was a kid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a sort of a sense of community almost to it.
Yeah.
Like, I remember that too. And like, that's very shallow, but like, and yeah, that someone's going to make money off of your nostalgia, but like, puts a smile on your face.
Yeah.
It's okay, I guess.
That's what Nintendo does anyway. So like,
yeah, kind of.
I'm fine with it. Martha shakes her head.
Although
I guess I just played good games when I was a kid.
Well, you know what else is coming to Switch?
What?
All your favorite point clicks.
What? Oh yeah, remember Humongous Games? Didn't they just? Oh wait, or is that just coming to PC?
No, that's coming to Switch.
Is it coming to Switch too?
Oh yeah! You posted the thing. I remember now. It's this. I'm very excited.
Join us in this wave of nostalgia, Martha.
But those were good games. They still are good games.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. They were good games.
But yes, I will buy the same one again. They're not even remakes. They're just ports.
Yeah.
So, but yeah.
But it's okay if you do it.
Because they were good.
Uh-huh. Didn't you just hear Steven talk about how good Gex was? That's how you sound right now.
Fine. I'm just like the rest of y'all.
Of course, Steven, we know that like Gex and Bug were terrible.
Oh no,
those games were pretty good.
No, Humongous Games were good. Gex,
she has it over us, but like we can't admit it.
No. Real news, I guess.
Yeah.
Avengers Endgame came out, and also Game of Thrones, the newest episode came.
I just can't even with any of these.
We don't have to get into that because we're not every other podcast in the world.
It's true.
I just wanted to note that like that's all people are talking about right now.
It's true,
and it's like, you go to any like tech blog or gaming site and they'd have a take on Avengers Endgame. It's like, I know you need the hits, but like, just, I came here for a reason.
Right.
Yeah. Like, Polygon is, I love you, Polygon, but all your coverage right now is Game of Thrones, like the whole thing.
Oh man.
Yeah. But yeah, Polygon is actually kind of the worst at this. They have so much culture writing, and it's not bad. It's perfectly fine. And I think there's something I don't want to be one of those people who say, like, this is a gaming site, just talking about games. Mm-hmm. But, like, at a certain point, if 60% of your front page content is about movies, music, concerts, and, like, television shows,
yeah,
like, what are you? Like,
that's why I stopped reading IGN, is because they kept talking about comic books and movies, and I was like, I want to read about video games.
Well, see, IGN made a they specifically made a pivot to being about entertainment media broadly.
Sure.
And so that's something Polygon hasn't done.
Oh, okay.
They're just sort of doing it.
Sure, okay. Yeah, there's a lot of discussion about Avengers and stuff.
But the best discussion is by our friends Felix and Dale.
That's right. So we're not going to talk about these things, but my wife and our pal Felix has a podcast, which we've mentioned on the show before, but we haven't been plugging it lately. Felix Drags Dale Through the Marvel Universe. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, or on your podcast app, or it's an open RSS feed, and go to felixanddale.com, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a podcast where we do nothing but movie spoilers and talk about America's ass.
God, yes. And they just did their Endgame episode. They've been doing one for each. I went with them to the opening night, Thursday night, 1:30 in the morning.
Oh, my God. Night.
That's morning.
Yeah, I know. And it's a 3-hour movie.
Yeah.
So we didn't get home till 6 a.m.
this.
And then that Friday, Dale and Felix got together and recorded their Endgame episode so they can get it out, along with everybody else who got their podcasts out right away.
Yeah.
But now the set is complete.
Yeah.
They've got episodes for every movie in the MCU, and they're going to come back as new ones are released. They are hilarious, and what I love is Dale has no interest in these movies, but she's a very good note taker, so she knows more about the MCU than anybody I know now. And she has the best nitpicks.
Yeah.
So if you like these movies, but you also like teasing them and making fun of them, you will enjoy this program.
Yeah.
Felix Drags Dale Through the Marvel Universe. Check that out.
Totally. In other news.
Yes.
Riot walkout planned on May 6th because I don't know the exact details.
So Riot Games, it's not news that Riot Games has problems with sexism, and very high profile ones. And you can look all that up. But they recently, like a lot of big employers, they have this thing when you sign a contract with them to work there, you don't read all of it, or you don't think you have the ability to change on any of it, and it includes forced arbitration. So in the case of sexual harassment claims, you have waived your right to sue. So instead, you go through this arbitration, this third-party arbitration system. And, you know, there are benefits to these kinds of systems. I'm not going to defend it all in this case, but the reason they exist is because sometimes these claims can be resolved relatively quickly without a bunch of the mechanisms of civil courts, right?
Okay.
A lot of times when you sue someone in like small claims court, a judge will recommend you do that, right?
Yeah.
So there are places for these things, but corporations have abused the existence of this method to avoid class action lawsuits, particularly because you have to do these each individually, and then it becomes a burden for the claimant.
Yeah.
But also to just sort of stay out of the courts, and it's terrible. And Riot Games has one of these. They're not unique in this case. They don't get special mention for being bad about this. But two of their harassment claims, they were trying to take it to court, and Riot Games was trying to sue them to keep them in this third party arbitration process. So a bunch of people at Riot were saying, well, this is no good. This is unfair. So they're staging a walkout, which, according to our calendar math, I did the calendar math on this because it's important.
Yeah.
It would be yesterday when you hear this. It would have happened yesterday. So we don't know, any of the news that surely broke yesterday about it. But I did want to make sure we talked about it. There's been some things since they announced this walkout. Riot gave a response saying, like, we appreciate all, it's all the same, you know, corporate
same
HR speak,
yeah,
speech. And I'm very cynical about this, and I think that's the right attitude. They said, we're going to have like town hall meetings and all hands
where we'll,
gets together.
Yeah, where we'll hear what you have to say and follow none of it.
Yeah, exactly right. It's very much a case of like, how can we work through this and do better, but with no consequences to us or to our management or to the people responsible? Like, you understand the motivation, right? Like why they would feel like, let's solve this. But that's not what people are asking for. People are asking for proper change, either change in management or consequences for individuals.
Yeah.
And certainly change in culture. And that's something, that's about the only thing they have control over, is that change in culture. Mm-hmm. But that's generally not good enough. Also, it's hard to trust that that's really going to happen.
Yeah.
But they did put out a statement, and, you know, not a lot of people took it seriously. They also, this broke yesterday, where we're sitting from our recording, Riot said, okay, for all new employees, we're going to let them opt out of this arbitration clause. Okay. The problem is that doesn't affect anyone who's
already there, got an affected,
or the people who are currently being litigated against.
Yeah.
And they said something like, this isn't perfect, but like, and we're going to see if we can try to expand the opt-out. Basically, they have some like logistics to get through, which is not a good excuse, but that is an excuse.
Sure.
And the walkout organizers saying, okay, great, but we're still walking out.
Yeah.
So things may have changed in the couple days before you hear this episode.
We might put something in the show notes something different.
But it's an important thing, and it's really, really great that the people at Riot feel empowered enough to do something about this fear of retribution, because that's definitely a problem at gaming companies.
Yeah.
I think it's a problem everywhere, but particularly at gaming companies where there's this culture of like rah-rah gaming and you should be glad to be here, fear of reprisal for these kinds of mass actions. And so the fact that there's now a groundswell and that there are organizers and they're not being secret about it and they're actually taking a stand, I think it's an excellent development.
Yeah.
I don't know what the ultimate solution is, Riot is noticing now, finally, for real.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I can trust anything.
Whether that means anything is, we'll see, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, at the very least, even though we're talking about this, I guess, retroactively, like, because we're telling people about it, you can look it up and you can discover what happened.
Yes.
And all the information about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, use that to empower yourself.
Yeah, and look into the people who did these who actually organized it. Follow them on Twitter.
Yeah,
keep up with this. Mm-hmm. Right. I think a lot of times we read these things and then we have our takes.
Yeah.
But there's only so much an individual can do that's removed from these situations.
Right.
But it's on all of us to continue to pay attention.
Right.
And to know the details so that we can be more informed about this and know when we have opportunities to take action.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And the news, Epic acquired Rocket League developer Psyonix?
Lame.
Yeah, a lot of people are really like, oh no, exclusivity or whatever. Mm. I don't know.
That makes sense.
I didn't even think about that. I just like the
company acquires company for bad news. Yeah.
And Rocket League is so like perfect.
Well, I feel like Psyonix has not been indie for a long time. Like, they're indie in the same way Riot Games is indie.
Like, right, they're indie like PopCap or King Games or any of those things that has like a giant hit.
Like, which like is weird because like, I guess it's just like they don't own another company. That makes them indie at this point.
Yeah.
They're like AA.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
AAA.
Yeah. It may be a little unfair to strip them of their indie bona fides because they've been successful.
Yeah.
But like, they're not playing in the same space.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You know?
It'll be interesting to see what will happen with that change.
Valve has done this too. They've purchased developers.
Right.
And they fold them in to be lost into the caves of Valve.
Yeah.
Like, the man with the valve on the back of his head eats them.
Well,
and
I think Epic is now starting to develop a reputation for what does it mean to be acquired by Epic.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's true or not, it's a reputation.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see how many more of these types of, because they got the money, they can they can buy these successful companies.
They can.
And if you're one of those companies, why wouldn't you say yes to a really good offer like that?
Mm-hmm.
So this seems like a portent of things to come.
Yeah. Totally.
Mm-hmm.
Indie game removed from Switch eShop for including a Ruby compiler. Oh, yeah, I remember this.
It's a dark room.
Yes.
I wish I had bought it before it went away.
Yeah, because he snuck in a compiler so like other people could somehow find it and then mess with it to like, you know, to learn about how Ruby works, I guess.
Yeah, so it's just a text editor that will make Ruby applications.
Yeah.
And the way you would do it is you plugged in a USB keyboard to your Switch dock, because the Switch supports keyboards out of the box.
Mm.
And then you hit the tilde key. That's it. Then
it
opens it. But like, when is that ever going to happen? It's not part of Nintendo's testing parameters to test for that.
Yeah.
And so it was snuck in. It was actually, the way the developer says is It was snuck in kind of at the last minute.
Oh.
Like, it was just like, this was, as they were going through the publishing guidelines, they were like, what could I throw in there for funsies? Mm-hmm. And there was an interview. It was actually very sad in a sense. The developer, because it got removed. This is a very small game.
Yeah.
This is the neighborhood we're playing in. That's a bad thing for that developer.
Yeah.
And how does that impact their relationship with Nintendo going forward?
Right.
And certainly that means that they're not getting sales starting now.
Yeah.
But it was just like a sort of a little whim that they had, and they didn't realize how seriously Nintendo would take it. And the interview was sort of like very somber and like, this is the worst weekend of my life. Mm-hmm. And I didn't mean to cause this trouble, which is unfortunate because he actually hobbled the compiler so that it only could do certain things.
Yeah.
It
wouldn't harm the Switch in any way or anything like that.
Ultimately, it was not homebrew folks are incredibly resourceful.
Yeah.
But it was not necessarily an invitation to hack the Switch,
right?
Which might have been people's first impression. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of unfortunate for this developer because they didn't really, they just had this fun idea and didn't realize that they were running up against someone who was not going to, you know,
deal with that.
Yeah, it didn't want to it wasn't going to take seriously their assurances that it wasn't going to break anything.
Yeah.
And so it's a sad story, but yeah. it's so when you certainly when you're developing your games and you think you have a bit of a rebel spirit, like there's something about it's sad because you don't want to extinguish that spirit.
Right.
Right? There's something there's something really really pure and lovely about all that.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I mean I agree, but I think also at the same time it feels like it felt like a dangerous premise that like I can understand why Nintendo would want to remove it off of their store.
I don't want to make Nintendo the bad guys here, but I also don't want to say that it was right for them to be so hard-headed about it exactly.
I mean, yeah, it's weird because like I don't want to. Yeah, I guess I feel the same way.
Well, I think it was cool. I don't think Nintendo made the right decision because one of the things that they do well is keep everything locked down so you know you have a good experience on it, but that comes at the detriment of people like doing stuff like that's the whole Mac versus PC sort of thing where a PC you can go on and put in all the stuff. I guess you can do that on Macs, but most people don't know how to do it. Right. So
it's very hard.
I don't know, I think it would have been interesting to see.
Well, the defense I will say to Nintendo is that if this developer had written a procedure to show the Nintendo how to find this.
Right.
Nintendo's lot check team could have checked it and cleared it.
Yeah, actually, yeah. That's my main problem with it.
Yeah.
Is that, like, they could have... I don't think the developer was trying to be dishonest at all, but, like...
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I think that, like, it comes across as dishonest, and as a result, like, Nintendo was like, no, we can't have this.
Right, Nintendo didn't get to see it before it went in the wild, that's their concern.
Yeah.
Whether that's a little bit overbearing, I think, is a fair argument to make.
Right.
And I think the developer even said, like, I should have just put it in as a feature.
Yeah.
And not, you know... and so it's just a sad story.
Right.
Hopefully it can get corrected. I can't imagine this is something that will bar this developer from the eShop, for the future. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you're an indie developer, like, just the resource, like, sending those emails it's, like, just a bunch of extra work to fix.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not fun.
Yeah, that's hard.
So I feel terrible for this developer.
Yeah, it's a bummer, especially because that game you can play for free online. It started as a web game.
Oh, cool.
So if you go to a dark room... I can't remember the exact URL. I'll put it in the show notes, but you can go play it.
Yeah, well, we'll make that entreaty to our listeners. Like, check this developer out. Give them your support if you can.
Yeah.
Because it may have been a mistake, but like, you don't want the consequences to be outsized.
Right.
Know?
Right. Totally.
So much VR.
So much VR.
Oh yeah, Martha, you take this.
Oh, okay. So a bunch of VR from the VR people came out. So Valve,
the Confederated Assembly of VR people.
Yes. Yeah. Well, okay, so here's something interesting. It's the Valve Index, which came out or is coming out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is the new
started. Yeah.
Which is the new Valve thing, but it's not a Vive thing.
No.
Because it's not with HTC. And my brother was asking me what's the deal with that? And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, it's Valve, not Vive. And I was like, oh, I didn't even notice that. So what is the deal with that? Are they just not doing stuff with HTC anymore?
Yep. And this process started a while ago. So the HTC Vive was a product that was co-developed with Valve. Valve's hardware engineers. Valve, I believe, has the patent on the Lighthouse system.
Okay.
Valve did a lot of this work, and they needed HTC's expertise in manufacturing, miniaturization, display technology. Like, HTC brought a ton to the table, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was, I, who's to say? But in my mind, equal partnership with the Vive.
Yeah.
HTC, soon after, got, like, once it was in the marketplace, HTC was like, oh, Valve, we never get their emails back. Like, this is my like role playing of like what happens between those companies.
Okay.
Is like, if you partner with Valve, then you had better be prepared to do most of the work.
Oh,
like, ultimately.
Sure. Yeah.
And so HTC, they opened up their own store. They, the Vive Pro is something that HTC developed.
Okay.
Right. Oh, interesting. Okay.
I don't believe that there was a divorce at that point. But like, that was something that they pushed for. And then Valve was like, all right, well, we'll make our own thing then. And okay. So HTC kind of feels like they kind of got used a little bit.
Yeah.
Their expertise got leveraged. And then, so they're trying to run their own VR business now.
Okay.
There's the HTC, I think it's called the Focus.
Yeah.
It's an Android device, like just like Oculus Go. It has nothing to do with Steam VR. But HTC and Vive, I think it's even spun off its own company now. They are trying to make sure that they maintain a status as a leader in VR, but consumers don't care. Consumers think the Vive means Valve.
Yeah.
And so the Valve Index, which is finally Valve, making their own headset with their own controllers, that's the, what a lot of people think is, oh, it's the Vive 2, essentially. It's a very common impression.
Okay.
I feel really animated about this, basically because like, I'm always suspicious of like why Valve does the things the way they do.
Sure.
And I get nervous about it. Mm-hmm. But I will say, like, there's been press access to the headset to do some demos and reviews.
Okay.
And it's crazy expensive. It's too big an upgrade, I think, for a lot of people. I wouldn't recommend it. If you have a Vive, you're fine, okay. I think, based on the impressions I've read.
Okay.
But if you've got a lot of money to throw at VR and you just wanted the next greatest thing, it's got some great improvements.
Okay.
But it still uses the Lighthouse tracking system. Mm-hmm. It's not inside out the way a lot of new devices are. So it still maintains the difficult setup process.
Okay.
And so I think it's a disappointment to some who are hoping that it would not only be better, but a little bit more evolved the way that Oculus is doing with their devices.
Yeah.
Right. So which brings us to the Oculus Quest, which is very exciting. Oculus Quest is the one that, and also the new Oculus Rift also does this, right? Yeah. Where you don't need the lighthouses anymore.
That's right.
Which is really cool. Yeah. And the Quest, you don't even need wires to your PC because it just runs on itself.
Yeah.
Which means it's a little bit lower powered, but like,
it has a Snapdragon 835, which is the exact same chip that's in my phone, and my phone is over a year old.
Wow.
But the reviews are like, cannot believe how good it looks for the technology that's in there.
Okay.
So it's definitely mobile class hardware, and it runs a subset of Android. But Oculus has been doing a good job of getting a bunch of their developers to port to the Oculus Go, which was also Android-based, and they've been working with Samsung on their Gear VR. So they're really well-positioned to have developers port their PC games to the Quest.
Yeah.
Beat Saber apparently looks great on it. It is definitely a visual downgrade.
Okay.
But they've done a really good job by all reports of making a really high-end experience and leveraging every last drop from that chip. Pretty interesting, but fully tracked in 3D space without any external anything. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's nice.
It's really cool.
You don't need a computer?
Nope.
Wow.
And it's like $400.
Oh, snap. That's approachable.
This is the thing that I went to Oculus's one of their conferences a couple years ago.
Okay.
And one of the people on stage was, I'm like, they had this like 10-year roadmap of like, these are the things we need to get to where we're going. And they were really focused on saying like, it needs to be like affordable and the setup needs to be really easy and it needs to make sense at first blush.
Yeah.
I think a lot of early VR, like Martha, you have a ton of experience with this, just like setting it up, getting it going.
We haven't played in so long because we don't have, like, it just takes so long to even start.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because VR, and one of the good things about promoting VR that a lot of the developers and hardware makers decided early on is, we're not going to say that this is going to replace video games. Okay. This isn't the next step in video games. It's a new thing. Oh. And I think people took that and like, oh, they believed that more. If they were being told that it was going to replace their video games, no one would buy these things.
Yeah.
But because it was a new thing, but what that means is that they've set themselves up to compete with Netflix.
Right.
Yeah. And so, if the setup is a huge burden, and even for people who are really excited about it, like I feel the same way. Like I've been jazzed about VR for a long, long time, and it is a hassle to get into. Like,
it just feels so, to me, it feels like I mean, I don't know. I feel like I put the blinders on whenever VR comes up. But
yeah,
but it feels like a separate thing from like every other video game, every other thing.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that you bring up that like it's competing with Netflix. Because yeah, it is competing for your time.
Yep.
Netflix is convenient. You press a button and you can watch a movie.
Mm-hmm.
But like with VR, you got to set up the headset. You got to put this giant headset on and it's uncomfortable and you got to, you know, make it, you know, there's a whole lot of things involved. And it's good that they're making progress into making it more approachable, yeah, including the price too.
Well, it was something that Oculus has been specifically focused on.
Yeah.
And something that Valve is not focused on.
Right.
Like, which isn't to say they don't care about it or they didn't think about it. Yeah. Like, they're not dummies over there.
Yeah.
It's just not something they really made as a core principle of their work. And so the thing about the Quest is you put it on your head. It's got these pass-through cameras, so you can see the real world.
Okay.
And then you take the controller and you stand in one place and you, with like a laser pointer, draw your boundary. It takes 10 seconds.
Hmm.
On your head, boundary, set up, 10 seconds.
Wow.
Like, that is, compare that, if anyone has set up a Vive system, like, and
reset up and reset up and reset up the Vive system.
Even if you haven't moved it. Like, yeah, it's, you know, you think, like, if you have a little motivation, how hard is those things? But we talk about this when we talk about, like, UI and game mechanics, and, like, there's a certain point where you needs to be autonomic and simple,
mm-hmm,
and that threshold is so much lower than you think it is. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one bummer is that Oculus is owned by Facebook, isn't mm-hmm it? Which makes me real suspicious. Like, what are the privacy policies on all these new devices?
Uh-huh.
That makes me not want to buy it. Right. So I'm like, I want something else, some other company to make one,
yeah,
that is as good as the Quest is, or better.
What is the Oculus Rift S? Is that just a better Rift?
It is.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then it has inside-out tracking.
I don't know what that is.
That's the, well, you don't need the external cameras.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah,
cool,
yeah, yeah. Cool. So basically, it's a replay. You plug in your PC just like before, plays, yeah, all the same games.
Yeah.
Basically, the reason that this was being released now, I think they probably maybe had it ready a little earlier, is that Oculus has done a PR push to say, no more tracking cameras ever.
Okay.
So they've discontinued the original Rift. Like, you think you could just like offer it as a discount, mm-hmm, but they have made a strategic decision to say, we're a company that doesn't sell cameras now.
Okay.
And so, and it's a very interesting trajectory for like the two, yeah, main VR competitors, because, yeah, Oculus started with the dream of sitting in your gaming chair at your PC and playing flight simulator games. Like, mm-hmm, that was the idea of the Oculus originally. And then Valve steps in with their partnership with HTC and says, set up these things and use your whole living room. And that's what all VR games will be.
Yeah.
And then Oculus, very late in the process of the Rift, let you do these sort of quote unquote room scale things. Mm-hmm. But it was really better. You need to buy a third camera for that. And they're actually a little clunky.
Yeah.
The cable wasn't quite as long. Like, they didn't quite plan for it to be as long as you needed to. And so you could tell that, I mean, they got there, but like,
yeah,
you can tell that it wasn't part of their focus until a little later in the process. Mm-hmm. And now they are the ones who say, like, go to the park with this.
Huh.
Like, you know?
Okay.
Really interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting.
I don't know. I'm jazzed about some of this stuff, but like I used to host a VR night at Glitch,
right,
every,
yeah,
month. Mm-hmm. And so I had all the systems and I set it up and I did lots of demos, did lots of tutorials, but that we don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I guess I'm not gonna buy these. And I feel really sad about that.
Oh.
He says with the knuckle controllers over there.
Yeah, I do. I have some pre-release engineering
samples. Oh, yeah, that's right. You can get that.
Yeah, so the Valve Index includes new controllers that are designed by Valve,
okay,
that strap to your hands so you can let go of them and they still stay stuck to your hands.
Yeah.
They've been sending them out to developers for months and months and months. And I got a couple of these. And I was actually trying them out last night for like only the second time, even though I've had them for a little while.
Sure.
I don't know if I like them.
Oh.
They're very, you have to fit them on your hand just perfect.
Oh.
Think about if you had a game controller,
yeah,
that was stuck to your hand.
Yeah.
Like, obviously that wouldn't be great, but just pretend that there was a reason you wanted to do that.
Okay.
And then think about all the times you play video games where you sort of just adjust it in your hand as you grab it.
Yeah.
And that is a thing you cannot do with these controllers.
Right.
Like, you move your thumb over to the joystick, and if it's not exactly where you expect it to be, then you need to move your thumb. You can't move your hand. Right? It's a very subtle interaction thing that I'm not sure they understand, because I had the hardest time using this. And it might be because I don't have enormous hands, but I have bigger hands.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's meant to, you know, work for a lot of different people, but like, they're very hard to get right. And also, when you're playing VR and you have the straps on your wrists,
yeah,
and you need to like go to the computer and type something, or you need to like take a drink of water, you drop them and then they dangle from your wrists, and then you have full use of your hands.
Right, yeah.
With these, you don't. You have to actually take them off your hands or pick anything up.
That's annoying.
To take the headset off it's actually kind of tricky to do with the controllers just strapped to your hands.
Oh.
So like it's a very Valve idea. it doesn't allow for a lot of really interesting mechanics.
Okay.
And it, as a developer, it's been fun to test those out and see what the APIs for all that are. But I'm a little nervous that the Index won't get enough of a market share for those mechanics to make their way into a lot of games.
Yeah.
Really interesting. Hmm. Well, I'll dig up some articles about those controllers and like the UX paradigms that they enable or restrict.
Yeah.
But I feel my reaction, I think, is not common. I think a lot of developers are really excited about these controllers.
Okay.
For really good reasons. Mm-hmm. I'm just not catching it as much as I think other people are.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know. They seem a little, yeah, the way you're describing it makes it sound uncomfortable in a lot of ways.
Yeah. It has this weird Achilles heel that I just haven't heard people talk about yet.
Okay. Yeah. Borderlands 3 promises no microtransactions, but it has microtransactions.
Uh-huh.
Well, so. Yes. Sort of, though. Unless that, because Borderlands has always had DLC stuff, like you can buy skins, but you can't ever, at least I don't know if they're changing this Borderlands 3, but in Borderlands 2, you had to go outside of the game to buy them. So like you had to buy them as DLC from the Steam or wherever you bought it.
Yeah.
They didn't have a store in the game itself.
Right.
It wasn't like a bunch of like NPCs saying like, hey
what have you buy some currencies and then you can
So
slightly different, but I still understand that why people were like, but you do though.
Yeah. So, Gearbox head Randy Pitchford made a statement about like,
never listen to what he says.
I know. Like a real defiant statement. It's like, we don't have any of that stuff. We're not some free to play, pay to win garbage. We don't have microtransactions and like, but you do though.
Like, yeah.
And I want to talk about this not to like, you know, to tear on Randy Pitchford. I think there's plenty of opportunity for that and plenty of cause. Mm-hmm. It's about like why he would say something like that.
Yeah.
And because he believes it. He wasn't lying to anybody.
Yeah.
He was, I guess he's wrong, but like he believed it because Borderlands is, I think that it's designed to not be pay to win. Like they are being tried to mindful of that stuff.
Right.
The issue that I'm most curious about here is that you can pre-order Borderlands and you can get it in a deluxe, super deluxe or collector's edition. And in return, you get like stat bonuses that you can use in the game. I guess they're like loot drop. I don't know how any of these games work, but you get these like statistical bonuses that you do pay for.
Mm.
And it's a single player game. It's not like a pay to win multiplayer scenario, but that's still something.
It's a cooperative multiplayer.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And, you know, I can't imagine that being something that, it's not going to benefit one player over the other in that case. Like, I'm not worried about that. I'm worried more about the motivations of the consumer. That a player who loves Borderlands, and Martha, maybe you can answer this question. Like, if. Would that tempt you to buy the deluxe edition? Like to get stuff in the game? Let's say you
skins.
Couldn't get... Yeah. But what if you couldn't get those unless you pre-ordered it?
That would be lame.
Yeah. And I don't know...
That would be lame because there's a time limit on that. What I would like is like you get it free with the pre-order, but you can buy it for $2 on the Steam store or whatever later.
Yeah, that feels like an honest enticement, right?
Yeah. That might make me to pre-order it if it was like... Oh, it's all bundled in there.
Yeah.
Like I bought the Game of the Year edition of Borderlands 2 and it's like it comes with all the things.
Yeah.
And, you know. and I hope they do now I'm just going to rant about how Borderlands is cool. But I hope they do the thing where like it notices you have the other games on your PC, it will give you special skins based on that.
Oh, yeah. Sounds like a thing they would do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I also don't care how many of this comes together. It's more just about like the statement that he made about how like we're pure and innocent, not like those evil companies that do these bad things.
Yeah.
And that you know, objectively, that might be partially true.
Yeah.
But just the defiance about saying that. And then you look at the actual thing, like you actually are doing things that are enticements to buy these elements in a way that is very similar to how other companies do it. And they don't think they're being evil either, you know?
Right, but... Yeah, I understand. This is me just liking Borderlands a lot.
Yeah.
But I do think it's different.
I don't want to challenge your love of Borderlands. I think that would be a crime.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I think they have to make money and too.
Mm-hmm.
So, like the way they've been doing it to keep keep getting revenue, to me, has felt way less scummy than a loot box.
Yeah.
Like, the loot boxes that they have, you don't pay money to try.
Right, they're mechanical loot boxes.
Yeah.
They're not quote-unquote loot boxes like right. that's come to me.
Yeah, and they said specifically that this game will not have loot boxes. Well,
in that sense.
Evil loot box.
Yeah. So. And I,
which to me feels like, you know, oh yeah, yeah. Be real proud of that. Like, like it seems the, like.
Oh, that's a regular thing that people are saying now.
Yeah.
With
well,
everything.
With, what is it? There's a new Star Wars game. It's a single player Star Wars game that's coming out that was announced. And they announced on their official Twitter feed, like, no microtransactions, no loot boxes. And we're like, great. Cool. It's like someone coming to your house and saying, I'm not going to hit you. Like, like I, you want me to be proud of you for that? Like,
that's true.
I don't
know. So that's you, Mark.
Some, I don't know if I believe it. So some of that, just that, that statement struck me as a little bit like, you know, glass houses.
Yeah. Game dev's weird.
Speedruns.
Yes. Mario, Tula. Whoa, Martha, you're so fast. a tool-assisted speedrun, I think we talked about that in our speedrun episode, but a tool-assisted speedrun is a speedrun where like somebody used a computer to do all of the movements and such.
Yeah.
In a Mario game, which Mario game was it?
It was Super Mario Brothers.
Ah, okay.
It's the one people speedrun.
Yeah, that's true. That record was beaten by one frame.
Yeah.
Which, wow.
If you've looked into Mario speedrunning, it's super fascinating because Mario in particular has this interesting thing called the 21 frame rule.
Oh, yes, that's right.
If you do really well on a certain level, there's a certain time that if you beat it and you beat it any faster in a range of 21 frames, it doesn't matter because the game will load the next level always at in intervals of 21 frames.
Yeah.
So if you, you know, if you beat something by 20 frames, your last record, then the game will just pause for 20 frames, depending on exactly where it is, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of speedrunning is based on trying to hit that point where you're where there's the minimal amount of delay between your completion and the next thing, trying to get a new frame rule, they call it.
Mm-hmm.
And so speedrunning in Mario doesn't really matter at a an important point until the final level.
Yeah.
Because the rules of Mario speedrunning, and this is arbitrary, is that the speedrun ends when you hit the axe to drop Bowser in the final
level. Yeah.
It's not when you see the princess. It's not when it says press B to start a new world.
Yeah, and traditionally in most speedrun things, it's as soon as your controls are taken from you.
Right, and sometimes there's debate as to when that actually is.
Yeah.
And I've seen speedruns where like they include a couple of seconds of the closing cutscene before like a thing shows on screen.
Yeah.
Like it's just decided amongst the community.
Right, yeah.
And so there's an interesting thing about, so this tool-assisted speedrun beat that last level by one frame. Because that's the difference you can finally make.
Sure, okay.
And it used a set of rules that is technically possible by a player.
Mm.
So you can't, there's, in Mario, if you press left and right at the same time, you can get some cheat kind of going, yep. But you can't do that on a controller.
Right.
So it's not allowed in these certain types of things.
Ah, I didn't know that.
Anyways, so, well, yeah, we'll put that probably, I've gone on more than I expected to, but it's really interesting just to learn all about Mario speedrunning and this particular case of, it's like basically like, everyone's like, okay, finally, we now have, there's now a chance that we could do it.
Uh-huh.
It's really interesting.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Xbox One X All Digital Edition? What does that mean?
You haven't heard of this?
No.
It's just an Xbox One S, which is the lower end. Actually, it's slightly faster than the original Xbox One, but whatever. It's of the two they sell now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just that without a disc drive.
Okay.
And so it's supposed to be a little cheaper.
Sure.
Although the Xbox One S already retails for about the price in terms of like actual in an actual store.
Mm-hmm.
Retails for what they expect to sell this for, so it's kind of weird. But it's basically, it's the first console, like main player console that has no, you cannot put a game into it.
It's
all digital. And it was kind of announced with little fanfare.
Yeah.
Partly because it's not that huge of a discount compared to the other one.
Yeah.
And the other one will play like high 4K Blu-ray. So like there's some downsides.
Yeah.
But as someone who I buy all my games digitally now, and a lot of people do as well, it just was not a lot of hubbub about it.
I guess it's not a big deal because, like, that's how people buy games now most of the time.
Right, but compare that to 2012 when the Xbox One was announced and there was some hint of sort of an all-digital element to it.
Yeah.
People were up in arms
about
what that meant for consumer freedom.
Yeah.
Think about, it's really like, I buy games digitally, but that means I have to pay full price on a game that's probably $15 off at GameStop because it's 6 months old.
Yep.
I do that for the convenience and I pay that, but I don't like that I do that because there isn't market competition amongst the various retailers.
Right.
Right. Yeah. The way there is in a real retail environment. So there isn't those forces that drive prices down.
Yeah.
You can't buy used games for $8.
Yeah.
Necessarily.
Oh, I guess so. As a result of this, this encourages players to use the digital, use that the storefront that is only on Xbox One.
Yeah.
And as a result, there's no.
Can you buy them off not on the store on Xbox One?
I think
if you can get a code somehow, then because I think I think Xbox has a code system where you can enter in.
I think that makes sense. I guess it's probably like when you if you buy a Blu-ray thing, you can get the digital download or something.
I guess I don't know all the details on how all the stores handle these things.
Yeah.
But
it is possible.
But in general, it funnels those customers onto the Xbox store to buy all their games.
Yeah.
And at least for now, digital games aren't cheaper than physical games. Mm-hmm. And that's more of a psychological perception thing, even though there's a lot less overhead. So there's more profit for the platform holder. There is ultimately more profit for the publisher and perhaps for the developer.
Yeah.
We at this level of indie development, I mean, do any of us think we're going to sell a game in a box in a store?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
In our lifetime?
No.
So like...
Oh, but although if one gets popular enough, you can get them like little limited runs of them.
Yep. Yeah. Limited run games is a couple of other publishers who specialize in taking indie hits and putting them in stores for collector's value.
Right. Yeah.
That's true. But it's interesting because I think it just hasn't been talked about a lot in the way that what it really means for what the next generation of consoles is going to be. And especially like Google Stadia is all online.
Right, yeah.
And like people haven't talked about it in the same way, right? Because it's not a box you put in your living room. And so it doesn't feel like the same kind of thing taken away from you.
Yeah.
And we're all used to our cell phones having one source to buy games.
Yeah.
Even on Android where you don't have to do it, people are used to just one place.
That's what annoys me. Because so many places don't put them out. Because you can just have them download like a store on your website where you can buy them.
Yeah.
Buy some like an app or a game and then you can download them onto your phone, which is how I've done like most of the games I have on my phone I bought from Humble Bundle.
Yeah.
And then because that's the only like everyone else is like go to the App Store. I'm like I don't want Google to know what I have on my phone. Thank you very much. But that's my rant. Anyway. Speaking of Xbox.
Yeah.
Trash talk. Time okay. You wrote on here.
Yeah, I've.
I like the transition because there was no context. Speaking of Xbox, trash talk.
It's just an article I saw about the Microsoft put out a little guideline for like how to trash talk.
Yeah,
a way of saying like don't use a racial slur. Instead, call them a knucklehead.
Yeah,
like that's basically what it is. It's very charming. The articles I read about it, there was a couple all thought this was cute, and also it seemed like oh, this is actually a good service. It might not be that effective.
Yeah,
but it's nice that Microsoft is not saying don't be mean.
Yeah,
because that's impossible. They're saying like if you're gonna yell at your opponents, if you're gonna insult them, like here's how to do it.
Yeah.
Use insults from the 13th century.
Right. So, like, I think it's good that, like, they're telling you not to use, you know, racial slurs or something
like that. Yeah, it's good. I mean, again, real, real proud of them.
Yes. But, when I read the trash talk stuff, I was like, these things are pretty offensive, too.
That's the point I was going to make.
Yeah.
Is that maybe it's because I don't play a lot of competitive games. Uh-huh. And when I play multiplayer games, I'm sort of oddly silent.
Yeah.
But, like, I think trash talk is not cool. Like, I don't care that it's fun or that it's charming or people don't take it seriously.
Yeah.
I think, like, even the examples Microsoft put in there, like when it says, like, oh, come back when you can, you know, aim, when you have, like, a proper aim or whatever. Like,
what?
It's all very,
that's
it's all
mean.
Very, it's all very calm.
Right.
But, like, and very seemingly harmless. But to me, it's like, no, that's bad.
That's still mean.
Like,
well, I think that trash talk is fine in certain circumstances, not when you're playing against random people because you don't.
But
know
when you're playing against Charles.
Oh yeah, of course. Well, I'm gonna insult the heck out of him, but I'm not gonna do that against some random person because I don't know them and it like they don't know me, and like I like when I'm if you're just a person walking down the street and you just randomly insult people on the street. That feels much worse than if it's somebody you already have a relationship with because you can tell when they're just playing or like they're
absolutely.
In the moment.
Right. There's the friendly jibes and whatever data called it. Like,
oh,
I don't remember.
But yeah.
Jocular insults.
Jocular insults, yes.
You know, just like amongst friends. Like, yeah, there's a relationship there. There's an understanding of what people mean.
Right, we have playful banter amongst ourselves on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like we all have an understanding of that, and like yeah, we that is our relationship. But like if somebody were to come up to me on the street and say that sucked, get good, and then come back when your KD is over one, I'm reading it off of them.
Yeah.
That I mean, I would feel much more insulted in that case.
And I think it's interesting because, like, what's the motivation for, like, the toxic people are not going to read this and take it seriously. But, yeah. Like, the effort is sort of being praised as, like, fighting the good fight against an impossible challenge. Mm-hmm. But, like, is it a recognition of the fact that you cannot stop trash talk? It's going to happen in a case which is also kind of sad. Say, like, can you not build an infrastructure that discourages it? And then you have to say, well, if it's there, we have to deal with it because there's a real politic almost element to it.
Yeah.
And I guess I understand that, but I also think that it's then endorsing an imperfect attitude.
Sure.
Maybe listeners who are like really big into competitive games, because like, when you get emotional, there's that, like, I don't have that experience, so I don't understand, I cannot relate to the idea of when that would feel good.
Yeah.
And also when it would feel good in a way that also doesn't feel like I'm actually insulting someone.
Sure.
Which isn't to say that even people who are like the worst of the worst, I'm sure they don't know how bad they're being.
Yeah.
A lot of the defense is like, oh, I was just joking or whatever, which is bad. But like, I just can't relate to that attitude. And I feel like, can't we build a society where like that, where we're less likely to want to, I don't know.
Well, okay. So the way I approach trash talk, is I put some skin in the game ahead of time.
Uh-huh.
Cause then like, if I lose, then it's on me. And then they get to that. Like I'm like giving them an open invitation to insult me if I do poorly. Yeah. But otherwise I'm like saying, oh, you're going to get wrecked in the head of time. That'll motivate them to try harder. And then like, afterwards, you don't have to say anything.
It might be a case of like, give as good as you get. And
yeah.
my reaction to it might be just the fact that like, it doesn't seem fun to like insult people that way. Uh-huh. And I don't want to be insulted that way. Yeah. Even if everyone's intentions are fine.
Yeah.
Like that just doesn't seem fun to me.
Sure.
And maybe if it seems fun to you, then no one does get hurt. I don't know. I'd be curious to see other perspectives on this because my reaction to this was like, this is actually bad. Like to actually just endorse trash talk at all.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe the only solution and alternate is just to like say it's bad, but then not be able to do anything about it. And I don't know if that's better.
Yeah. I suppose also there maybe is more context in it. Cause I've only read the trash talk examples that they had and the really bad trash talk examples that they had, but I don't know all the context of like how they were portraying it. Cause maybe they were saying, maybe like the way you're saying the trash talk is like, that sucked. Get good and then come back when your KD is over one. I don't know. You sound more friendly about it.
Jeez, that would like rock me to my core. If you're that charming about it.
Yeah.
You're like, oh my God.
He must really think that. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know the full context on how like Xbox is approaching it. When I first read the thing about this, I was like, no, these are still pretty insulting.
Yeah.
But
Martha, you play competitive games, but you generally prefer to do it with people you know. Like, yeah, you've talked about like going into matches with strangers and just getting very little out of it.
Well, I mean, it depends because like Overwatch, I like playing by myself way more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because it's just random and I'm against, I don't know. No one really interacts very much in Overwatch, I don't think.
Okay.
At least I don't have any of those things turned on.
Ah.
So I just play. And it's way easier than having to coordinate with everybody. And we don't get Shrek'd because there are a couple good people in my friend group. And so they like bring our matchmaking up and then we lose constantly because they're like, you know, it's frustrating. Anyway, so yeah,
you ride their coattails straight to defeat.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. That's contradicting your statement, but.
Well, no, I mean, I'm curious, like, because I don't play a lot of competitive games. I don't know how bad it is. Like,
I mean, League is pretty bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They've been making steps to make it better. I think, like, yeah, originally, I follow a little bit of how, like, Riot Games would approach it. Yeah. They originally approached it by, like, punishing people who were extremely bad.
Mm-hmm.
But then they started going, you know what? We should really be rewarding people and encouraging people to just be better. And that's what this is the approach that Microsoft is trying to do.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, better in that, like, you're still doing trash talk, but you're not, like, you know, throwing out slurs.
I guess that's what I mean is, like, this idea of, like, because whenever I hear about this, like, oh, we're trying to improve this toxic culture.
Yeah.
And I tend to trust people who know more about it than I do, about what that means and how effective those efforts are.
Right.
But when I see examples like this, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Like, when they say improve toxic culture, are they still not going after the sacred cows of the way that we interact with each other.
Okay.
Online. Like,
we should just have a button that says, I'm frustrated.
Just smash that button whenever I'm playing League of
Legends. That's, yeah. That's been Nintendo's attitude, is to have these like curated reactions that encourage a suite of behavior.
Yeah.
The problem is that they are very frequently co-opted to mean other things.
Yes. And additionally, like, players will just do something else that will make it worse. Like, there's the whole teabagging thing on Smash.
Well, that's it. Yeah. The whole idea of a crouch being turned into this thing.
Yeah.
And now is officially supported in some games.
Yeah.
And it becomes this, like, language. It's like, is it so hard to fight, and is it also so kind of at least a little appealing to some people that they're not interested in actually changing the wider culture to prevent people from wanting to do that?
Yeah.
Rather than just banning them from doing it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe that's unrealistic.
Well, yeah, I think there's an aspect in competitiveness that will, like, you know, you want to start this trash talk thing in some ways, because also, like, there's a little bit of a psychological play to it, because, like, if you insult them to a point where they get angry about it, they'll start messing up more in their game. Yeah,
you've talked about that with fighting games, like getting in someone's head.
Yeah, but like on the stage, when you're playing in a tournament setting, it's like it's sort of an understanding, and it's a person you're playing with in person most cases.
Yeah,
so like you can get punched if you say something bad, where you can't if you're playing it online. So like it's different. It's different.
That's probably where you and I split, because like, that is a line that I feel is not, that no one should cross. Like, that does not seem fair play.
Okay.
Even if two players are comfortable with that style of play, and I think most people are.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's a problem that needs to be fixed. Mm-hmm. But in my mind, I don't like that that's a part of it.
Sure.
And I think that comes down, that's some of this sort of stuff. It's like, if we take it as read that it's, that this extra textual element of competition is encouraged and strategic, then it becomes, well, like, what are the tools we use to do that?
Yeah.
And that means that it becomes preposterous to try to convince anybody that they shouldn't trash talk, because it actually has mechanical effectiveness.
Yeah. I think there's also a point to be made that, like, people who are not interested in trash talk, like yourself, are just not interested at all in engaging with these kinds of games, because they tend to encourage some form of trash talk, or like not discourage it enough.
And ultimately, that's okay, right? If you don't like a mechanic in a game, the developer does not owe you a version that you will like.
Yeah.
I think the difference is it becomes a matter of, like, if no games are ever developed without that, becomes a then you're locking off an audience of people from a genre or from a style or something.
Yeah.
Like
that.
I don't know. I don't have an answer. And I feel like I'm an extreme example of how much I dislike this sort of thing. I don't think I'm going to have a lot of people on my side.
Well, maybe we should talk about it in a future episode.
Maybe.
That'd be fun.
I'd like to hear from listeners.
Yeah. Definitely let us know what you think.
You know what everybody can like.
Everybody?
Everybody can like Detective Pikachu, at least from the trailers.
Everybody seems to. Speaking of things people don't agree with me about.
I'm very excited. It looked like a
fun movie,
It's getting really good reviews. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is from movie reviewers. This isn't from Pokemon superfans.
Right.
Although, time working the way it does, I think a lot of working movie reviewers are also Pokemon fans.
That's fair.
But, but yeah, it's being well received.
Mm-hmm.
It comes out soonish. I don't know when.
I have a complaint about how you put this in here, though, Mark. Because you said Detective Pikachu is best reviewed video game ever. Movie ever. And I mean, that might be true, but I don't think it's the best video game movie ever.
I said best reviewed. I didn't say best reviewed by Steven.
I know, but immediately I saw that and I was like, no, because the Prince of Persia movie is good.
Really?
Yes, I liked it. It's good. It's fun.
Dale liked that movie too.
Yes. Dale, where are you?
She just
come
left.
Here and support me.
I mean, Jake Gyllenhaal only gets you so much.
I thought it was just a fun movie. I don't know. I'm not expecting my video game movie to like make me cry. I just want it to be fun. So,
well, apparently Detective Pikachu has all the feels. So.
Oh, dang. Okay. Well, maybe I'll cry at this one. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah.
No. It's just going to be an insufferable couple of weeks for me. Everyone is like talking about how great it is and how it's so
it's
true
like that
to the
week
spirit.
Pokemon Go was really popular around you had to go along with all of us walking around.
I was the man. I was such a humbug. It was not a good look for me. Like,
I mean, I feel that way whenever everybody in my office is talking about Game of Thrones and they just keep bringing it up. I'm like, I do not care, but I can't tell them that.
See, that's the difference is Game of Thrones. There is a culture of people who are like, everyone loves Game of Thrones, but I don't.
Yeah.
Like, there's a whole culture of people like
that.
Well,
I haven't found any of those people yet.
Right. It's an acceptable attitude.
Okay.
Me being all humbug about Pokemon Go, no one has patience for that.
Yeah, that's kind of that's a hard sell there, right?
Yeah. You know what also is a hard sell, apparently? The Sonic movie.
Yeah. Oh,
Sonic. Yeah, it's not, doesn't look good.
The trailer just came out. The internet was like, haha, this is all terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And then the director of the movie said, okay, we've heard you. We're going to change the design of this character.
Yeah. Which is interesting.
Which we all have thoughts on.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. I guess my initial concern was like, oh man, you're going to force all these people to work all this time to get this thing out. But I don't know if that's actually the case because I only have an understanding of it from a video game standpoint.
Right.
And so I've been approaching it after hearing all these news about people getting overworked and laid off and all this other stuff. I was like, oh no, this probably happens in movies too. But does it? I don't know. So that was my initial reaction to it, though. Yeah.
So
I also thought that. Sorry.
Oh.
That's okay. I was waiting for your reaction. Yeah. So I think there's a lot of tweets were like, oh, the movies will finally, it'll be the most video game movie ever because it will have crunch.
Oh, boy.
And that's a very funny joke.
Yeah.
But also, I don't think people know that movies are already a nightmare work environment for special effects artists.
Oh.
That has been long the case.
Okay.
Video games don't have all the pain and suffering. They have quite a bit of it. But there's also other people saying like, oh, you know what? It actually won't be that difficult. They have all their rigs set up and animations already done. Mm-hmm. They'll just change some of the geometry on the model and then re-render it all. And it'll be work, but it'll be fine.
Yeah.
And then the reaction to that on Twitter is, oh, how ignorant are all these people thinking it will be easy?
Yeah.
The truth is nobody knows.
Yeah.
The workflow for this movie is has its own particular thing. There might be parts of it that will be easy. There'll be parts of it that'll be very difficult.
Yeah.
There'll be certain shots that the director will want to put more effort into. There'll be certain elements where Sonic holds something in his hand, and if they decide to make the hands bigger, then there's a different thing there. They might have to do some reshoots.
Mm-hmm.
There's not really... I think that people who are on Twitter with confidence that it will either be... It'll be some work, but, you know, not as hard as you think.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, I can't believe how ignorant you are to how hard this is going to be.
Yeah.
I think neither of those people know what they're talking about.
Sure.
And you know, and I'm also, I don't know exactly, I don't know how difficult it will be.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the right decision, but, like, think of it. If I'm the director of this movie and a big trailer came out and everybody hated it,
mm-hmm.
like, maybe making those changes is what's going to make sure everybody gets paid. Like, so the movie does well.
That's
like,
a good point, too.
You know, like, I think no one's talked about, like, maybe they felt they had to make this decision to save the movie.
Yeah.
Like, because of a bunch of angry internet people who, like, just can't stand that Sonic doesn't look exactly right. Because when I saw that trailer, I was like, wow, that's a terrible looking design. I don't care. Like,
yeah, I kind of don't care that much about the design.
I was a Genesis kid. Like, I love Sonic the Hedgehog.
Uh-huh.
Like, you can't do it right. Like, it's not going to be great.
Yeah,
like,
it's not going to be perfect. Yeah, my offense with that trailer was just, there was just nothing redeeming about it. Nothing in it I even found entertaining.
You don't find James Marsden super charming?
In a lot of cases, yes. Not in this movie. and I was disappointed, too, because, who plays Dr. Robotnik? What's his name?
Jim Carrey.
Thank you. Jim Carrey. I was like, this is great casting. I feel like he would do a good job playing Dr. Robotnik. But like his whole thing in that, I just did not find interesting at all. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just.
Yeah. I think a lot of the reaction was like, oh, Jim Carrey is perfect for Robotnik and Sonic is terrible. How'd they get one thing right? And I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just like, it's a kid's movie. It's like how you do that. How do you, it's like, basically it's just E.T., right? It's like a alien that you have to hide from the authorities. Like that's a tropey idea. It doesn't really fit the world of Sonic.
It actually works because Sonic looks really creepy and I hated E.T. even hid behind the couch.
Yeah.
So at all tracks.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see when they do their fixes and stuff and then they show the new design of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm curious to see what, at the very least, what Sonic will look like.
It'll be interesting to see what they change. Like, will they change the actual proportions of the character? Because people have complaints about that.
Mm-hmm.
Will it just be about the face? Will they just do something with the teeth? Ultimately, what's going to happen is they're not going to do enough to satisfy people.
Oh, yeah.
And that's no matter how much work they spend, I'm almost certain that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
20% of the people will always love your work. 20% of the people will always hate your work. And all you have to worry about is the 60% in the middle.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
So hopefully they can please the 60% in the middle.
Yes.
And hopefully we did too.
Yeah. You should really start doing more transitions into the outro.
That was a good one.
That's our show. If you haven't already, subscribe to the Nice Games Club in your favorite podcast app. Be sure to give it a good review if you liked it, or a nice like us. We need to know you're out there, so leave a review and tell all your friends too. We also want to hear directly from you, so follow us on Twitter and all the other things at Nice Games Club, and email us at contact@nicegames.club. Lastly, you can find out more about the show and your nice hosts, as well as get all the links and notes from this and other episodes at nicegames.club. And so, until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice. All you're covered right now is Game of Thrones, like the whole thing.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Oh, no. I have to say this. God damn it.
Did that work?
It's like right here. Oh, it's so annoying.
I'll wait.
Okay. I think we're good.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.